Welcome to the Ultimate Athlete Concepts Podcast. I'm your host today, Jeff Moyer, out of Dynamic Correspondence Sports Training, located in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And today we're going to be speaking with Rick Bruner. Rick is a nutritional scientist who just recently published a book, Explosive Ergogenics for Athletes. Rick has extensive background collaborating and studying under Soviet and Russian sports scientists in the 1980s and early 90s, and hasn't written a book since 1990. So we're very excited to have him today to catch up with Rick and see what's new in the field of supplements and ergogenic aids for athletes.
Well, in 1988, I got involved in the sport nutrition industry. I helped launch a new company, a new startup company called Champion Nutrition, which became quite popular with a product called Metabolol at that time. And there was some science that we were working with at Champion that was from the Soviet Union, and I was very intrigued by it. It had to do with what are called succinates or mineral succinates, and they're cellular energizing nutrients, basically. And so I started to correspond with the scientists in the Soviet Union about these different nutrients that they were using and getting response back. And, you know, it was very open and very friendly and cordial. So in 1988, I traveled to Russia and Bulgaria with the national with the NSCA, National Strength and Conditioning Association. And we went to Bulgaria first, and then we went on to Moscow, Russia. As well. In Bulgaria, we were with the Bulgarian Olympic weightlifting team. And in Russia, we were basically visiting different camps and sites and research centers and educational centers, basically. And I got to know some scientists from that. And then I was invited back again later that year to attend an international symposium in Leningrad, which is now St. Petersburg. It was a sport biochemistry symposium. And at that meeting, I got to know a lot of scientists, even additional scientists from the Soviet program, but also a number of very elite scientists from around the world. There were some from the U.S., there were some from Sweden and Estonia and Latvia, and of course the Soviet program itself. So I learned a lot, and that kind of started me on a path to developing and researching what are called ergogenic aids for athletes. Ergogenics is a word that simply means something that will enhance athletic performance. So it could be something like psychology, mental ergogenic, envisioning success or something. It could be a nutritional ergogenic, and we'll discuss those because that's really the topic of the book. Or it could be an item that's ergogenic, like say a running parachute or something that helps the training result. So throughout the late 80s and early 90s, I spent a lot of time going back and forth to the Soviet Union, working with their scientists. Most of the time I spent in Leningrad because that's where one of their main sport biochemistry and anabolic research centers is. It's still going on today. Now today they're actually studying genetics. The human genome was mapped a number of years ago now, and so researchers now are looking at what genes are more prevalent in the elite athlete. In other words, what makes the elite athlete so elite? And some of it is obviously their genetics. So there's a lot of new research on that, and that's kind of my new research. I haven't written a book since 1990. I wrote a book back then. I co-authored it with Dr. Ben Tabashnik, who was from the Soviet program. He wrote on the training side, and I wrote on the nutritional side. It's called Soviet Training and Recovery Methods. And so I was asked to write a new book. The title is Explosive Ergogenics for Athletes. Subtitle is Using the Science of Nutrigenomics to Maximize Performance. So the word nutrigenomic may be new to people as well. It simply means nutrients that influence our genes. What nutrients can turn certain genes off, what nutrients can turn certain genes on, so off and on as far as nutritionals. And really all of athletics is turning something up, turning something off, and the on pathways, of course, for an explosive athlete would be something that would enhance anabolic and restorative effects, anabolic being primarily muscle building, enzyme and muscle building process, and then also what are called ergogenics that would improve the neuromuscular process. The an athlete, an explosive athlete is not a bodybuilder. I've worked for many years with elite bodybuilders and some endurance athletes, and of course a lot of explosive athletes. So explosive athletes have a different demand of their body. They're trying to do something with force and power and reaction and quickness that's different than, say, an endurance athlete, and certainly a bodybuilder would train. So we want to train the neuromuscular system, making the nervous system work with the muscle system. So I was asked to write this new book, and I was glad to do it because the science has really exploded just in the last 10 years. In the old days, we would have to communicate by primarily through a letter or a telex back then. Sometimes a phone call, although calling the Soviet Union was kind of difficult to ring them up. But now with the internet, scientists from around the world can communicate very easily. In fact, just a few weeks ago, I communicated with a Russian scientist in Leningrad in St. Petersburg. I had a question for her, and then she directed me to a couple additional scientists in the Soviet program. So it's very easy now. And so the science has exploded, and not only is the science, in the old days, a lot of the science was on patients, on people that had, chronic diseases or something like that. And then we kind of create a bridge and extrapolate it into the athletic market and said, well, this works for this, so therefore it's going to help an athlete. And it wasn't always necessarily true. And some of that was a lot of misinformation that still perpetuates today. Now with all of the new good science, scientists are now not only studying nutrients and how they affect the genetic structures and the anabolic and processes with athletes in general, they're also testing it on elite athletes, which is really cool because now we're seeing, because athletes are different. I've worked with over 2,000 athletes over the years, all the way from high school age, young athletes, all the way up to professional athletes. And they're different. I mean, they're different genetically. They're different what level of training they're at. And so the nutrients influence athletes differently at different levels. And by that, I mean, as the elite athletes are very dialed in. I mean, that's why they're elite. And so we have to research and look at how these nutrients influence them differently than we would, say, a younger athlete. That's one of the ongoing things that we're actually doing right now is to study. We did some about 10 years ago with very elite athletes, and at the time we didn't get a lot of success because, we had success with younger athletes, with high school and college age athletes. But we didn't have the success with the same nutrient protocol with the elite athletes. And so the question is why? Well, the answer, I think, is that they're already finely tuned. And so to make improvements with an elite athlete requires could require different nutrient or especially different dose routine. And so that's now what we're working on.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, you cover so much that deals with nutrition, ergogenics, adaptogens, fat loss, training ideas in your book. It's just chock full of ideas. And what's great from a coach's perspective, most of the information out there is directed towards endurance athletes or bodybuilders or anyone looking to improve body composition. So I find as a coach who works with a lot of explosive sport athletes, this book is just a breath of fresh air and is just chock full with material and also uncovers a lot of misinformation that coaches, parents, and athletes have. One of the places where I'd like to start is talking about pre-workout supplementation. There's a growing industry of just pre-workout supplements and drinks and powders and gels that athletes are being told that they need to take that's going to help enhance their performance and get them primed and ready, and you kind of talk about this and disprove some things in your book, and I was wondering if you wouldn't mind kind of talking about some of the pre-workout supplements that are out there and your thoughts on them.
Yeah, I'd like to. That's a really important question because You're right. So much on store shelves now in health food stores and even in mass market stores for athlete nutrition is this pre-workout stuff. And I've never been a big fan of pre-workout supplements. And the reason why is that if you really think about training, training is different than competition. Training is setting you up and allowing, and hopefully you're adapting to a higher level. So when you go into competition, you have a greater result. So the training itself has to be very demanding and very stressful in a certain zone that the athlete can then respond to. The genes can reformulate and respond to that training, and the athlete can become better. But when we take in pre-workout supplements. The pre-workout supplements tend to blunt, in many cases, the adaptive response. I call the pre-workout supplements goodies. You know, the body, the goal of training is to create a stress so that you adapt, then you need to create a stress so you can adapt. If you take in a supplement that infringes on that stress response, blunts that stress response, then the athlete will not adapt. Will not improve. So what are these kinds of nutrients that are in pre-workout supplements that are what I would consider disadaptive nutrients? Well, science is now showing that simple nutrients like vitamin C, vitamin E, vitamin A, lipoic acid, N-acetylcysteine, things that we've used in the past, had no idea was a problem, are now being shown in many, many research studies to be disadaptive nutrients. Now, why would vitamin C be a disadaptive nutrient? Vitamin C is considered an antioxidant. In the adaptive process of the body, just to get briefly scientific here, how does the body adapt to stress? What is the stress that is causing the body to adapt? There are a number of molecules or compounds that are created during exercise that are stress-signaling molecules, meaning they tell the body, kind of in a simplistic way, man, that workout was intense and hard and whatnot. I got to get stronger, quicker, faster, whatever, better. Okay, so what are those pathways? Well, one is free radicals, or what we call reactive oxygen. Free radicals are actually signaling molecules for the adaptive response. They have to be in a certain zone. Obviously, too many free radicals can be destructive. But if you don't have enough of them, you will not improve the adaptive response. And vitamin C and vitamin E and other nutrients impede the stress response from a slight amount of free radicals because they blunt them. They're antioxidants. They stop the process. Other things in that process, that stress response, would be things like heat shock proteins, cytokine activity, a lot of things that are done during exercise that are part of this stress response signaling process that leads to adaptation. And when you start taking these goodies before the workout, you really blunt that response. And really, they're actually counterproductive. They're not even a zero sum. They're a negative. And so that's been just in the last few years that research has come out. So I covered it in the book pretty extensively as well. So you can read about it in there.
Yeah, I found that, one of the many things I found most interesting is how you talk about antioxidants and being a disadaptive, because, I mean, if you look at, the majority of sports drinks or any kind of supplement or pre-workout supplement, they just, it's right on the label, they advocate how much antioxidants are in it, all these different vitamins and stuff, and your science, you give a lot of science. One of the things as a sport coach or sports scientist, I really enjoy is the amount of science and citations and literature that you actually give that I've taken the names of the research articles and looked up myself, which I find very fascinating. Your book is very heavily researched. So there's a lot of science that go into it, but I found the antioxidants very, very, very interesting. Another thing with the pre-workout drinks, though, they spike them so much now with caffeine. You kind of talk about this, and that's what gives athletes the feeling that they're getting something from that, you know, caffeine's becoming more and more used with athletes and with people in training. I know bodybuilders and powerlifters who drink whole pots of coffee before they work out. I was just curious to your thoughts, you know, if you wouldn't mind discussing the use of caffeine with training and with athletes, if you're for it or against it or anything.
Yeah, caffeine is an interesting question because caffeine is in a lot of supplements. Sometimes it's just in a fairly low amount, but probably doesn't have as great a result, great an effect on the athlete. But in some cases, it's in a larger amount, and kind of the cumulative effect of it during the day is maybe a concern to some people. I don't mind caffeine. I'm very comfortable with it. It's got some good science behind it, increasing athletic drive and neuromuscular response. So it does have a place. But unfortunately, most of these workout drinks that are designed are made, the caffeine is added to them really not for any performance effect in general. It's made to fuel it. So it's in sport nutrition, one has to be careful getting sucked into supplements because there's the business of sport nutrition, and then there's the science of sport nutrition, and they don't always mesh. A lot of times the business of sport nutrition is just, you know, well, one company has it in there, then I'm going to put it in there without really any rationale for it. So it kind of perpetuates the whole process. And this isn't just the sport nutrition industry. This is the health industry in general. Most of my research today is actually on studies for chronic health conditions in aging individuals. And you go into any vitamin store or any health food store, and it's just chock full of products with just a lot of different nutrients. I'm a minimalist when it comes to nutrients. In the old days, we did have vitamin and mineral mixes in our protein powders and whatnot. We did that because we didn't know any better. You know, today, the science is there and should be teaching us a lot more. So a lot of nutrition companies need to get a little more current on the science so that they can give athletes something that will improve performance in a timing situation. You don't want to make the workout, you really don't want to make it easier. You want to make it more intense because the workout should really be as demanding as the competition or even more demanding than the competition in many ways. So you really don't want to blunt that. And by adding in different things, including caffeine, caffeine can be used at certain times. I go into a little bit of how to use caffeine in the book. It's a timing thing and the frequency of using it and whatnot. I'm getting so adapted to it. I'm not, you know, I like creatine too. Creatine monohydrate's been around now since 1990. I actually got involved with it in 88 in the Soviet Union for working with creatine way before it came on the market. Even creatine, some people are non-responders. Some people it blunts over time. You need to probably cycle it. And all that still needs to be worked out kind of on an individual basis with an athlete. And the same goes for probably caffeine. It's to fuss with it a little bit, but to not probably take it perpetually or consistently. And a lot of these products are loaded with it, and then I think that probably wants the ultimate adaptive response in some way.
Well, I'm actually glad that you brought up the use of creatine because that that still seems to be with sport coaches and athletes and parents there's a lot of misconceptions. You know, athletes will pull muscles during whether it's practice or competition, and you know, the coach will ask them if they're taking creatine. If they are, they just assume that the muscle pulls due to creatine creatine use, and parents aren't for it. And not a lot of people know that you were you know, one of the reasons why creatine was brought over to this country and popularized. And now there's many different forms and formulas, and it's mixed in with a lot of stuff. So I was wondering if you wouldn't mind discussing some of the confusion and stigma that surrounds the use of creatine, especially when it comes to how to use it or when to stack it and when to not use it and how to cycle it. Because athletes just seem to take it before they work out and just assume that the creatine is absorbed and used right before the workout, when you kind of discuss the timing and the cycling of it in your book a little bit.
Yeah, creatine is, I've had a lot of experience now with creatine over the past 20 plus years. So it's, I'm pretty dialed into how it works. The science has been really good on creatine research too. It's refuted a lot of those misconceptions about creatine, about how it causes, you know, cramping and this and that. And again, this may be on an individual basis. I you know, nothing is absolute in science. And that's what the listeners need to take home too, is that we're always learning more and more. But from my experience working with thousands of athletes that have taken creatine, and I've actually been surprised that athletes aren't taking more athletes are not taking creatine. A number of years ago, I was worked at Montana State University up in Montana, and I gave a lecture to the football team, and I asked how many players took creatine, and just a few hands went up, and I was really surprised because it had been out for quite a while. So I think there's still a lot of, you know, hunger for knowledge, misconceptions about things. So the practical side of creatine, what I see, is it can be very useful. It doesn't take a high dose. In the past, we've loaded it. We've done like 20 grams a day for a few days to load it in there. Creatine is both an energetic and an anabolic. So it does help with muscle growth as well. It's been recently shown to have anabolic activity in muscle, in skeletal muscle. But I've more often than not used it to increase power and explosiveness, as far as an energetic compound. So, you know, 20 grams, load dose. I more than often used it as just a 5-gram dose. More is not necessarily better. And I think the listeners need to really understand that these nutrients have windows of use, including protein. Protein, whey protein too, and we can cover that as well, because there's, you know, so many products out there that have huge amounts of doses of things. Like it's going to blast it through and it's going to force the anabolic process. The anabolic process is very complicated. And so there's what's called a full effect of nutrients. In other words, 5 grams of creatine is enough to make this process full. In other words, it's no longer a weak link in the process. Then more of creatine really is not of any benefit. Same goes for testosterone and anything else that you know, athletes have taken over the years. Excessive amounts of things can oftentimes lead to more problems than they can solutions. So the creatine, I usually recommend the 5-gram dose. Timing is not that important. It just needs to be saturated. I would prefer to probably take it well in advance of the training itself, so it's loaded in there. To take it put it into a pre-workout drink and have somebody take that right before or even during an exercise is probably a waste of time. Timing of it is not that part of the training. Probably I would say don't do it. But given a pattern of taking it, my athletes that I've worked with, we usually just take it in the morning, and they have practice in the afternoon, so we just load it, and it's in there. So and that seems to work out just fine. They have conditioning programs, and then they have practice in the afternoon, for instance. So
you make a great point there that I think needs to get reiterated upon coaches, parents, and athletes, that more is not necessarily better. Taking more of something doesn't mean that you're going to necessarily get better results. Doing more of something doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get better results. And this is something you reiterate throughout the entire book. And actually, my favorite quote in the book that you have is, in all nutrition ergogenics, I'm always looking for the weakest link. More is not necessarily better. If one little fine tune to nutrition or aid of an ergogenic can help improve performance without having to increase the total volume of training loads on the athlete, then this is the route I prefer to choose. This is absolutely a great quote that I try to use. This is something I try to do with my athletes, that more is not necessarily better. You know, I'll get athletes that will say, well, I want to work on my conditioning. I need to improve my conditioning. And where I usually try to start before I add any more volume to their training is I always ask them to write a diary of what they eat throughout a week. And then I'll take a look with that. And oftentimes I find that when I tinker, look at their diary, and we tinker with adding more of a vegetable, more fruits, getting rid of high glycemic carbohydrates or sugars, that oftentimes clears up the problem with the conditioning. And this is, again, something that for whatever reason gets lost upon coaches and athletes. And, you know, more protein they take in a single serving means that they're going to get bigger muscles immediately right after working out. And one of the things you talk about in the book that I find completely fascinating, which goes against conventional wisdom out there, that you try to stick to having the athletes take 20 grams or less of protein 30 minutes after the workout, and then take it again 2 to 3 hours after in order to increase the anabolic window. If you wouldn't mind, could you please discuss a little more about this?
Sure. Yeah, protein, we all know protein is important to build muscle and strength, and so, but we've kind of been over-mesmerized that more is better. It's been well proven now, and in fact, Michael Rennie, who's a very good researcher out of the UK, has studied this process and kind of coined the term muscle full, and I referred to it earlier. What that means is that the muscle is full, and more protein makes no difference at all. And the research has shown that about 10 grams of indispensable amino acids, those are ones that the body can't make. They're essential, and the body cannot make those specific amino acids. There's another 10 plus that the body can make, but those 10 are the ones that those 10 amino acids are selling about a 10 gram. The load are essential for maximizing the anabolic process. More than, in the book, I refer mostly to whey protein. I am a big fan of whey protein for a few reasons. One, it has a lot of these essential amino acids that the body can't make. And number two, it has some specific amino acids, like leucine in particular, that work on a very specific anabolic pathway called mTOR. Or I refer more likely to mTORC1 pathway. And this is the true anabolic pathway of building muscle structure. And all the research now that I do that's looking at for nutrient influences in anabolic muscle growth activity really revolves around mTOR. Whey protein has a lot of really good quality amino acids. Protein is absorbed very quickly. Milk proteins contain whey, and casein are the two primary proteins in milk. Casein is a slower-acting protein. I still prefer whey over casein. I don't even prefer blends because it's just a timing thing. And so its absorption is quick. If you give a 10-gram amount of whey protein to the average athlete, that will achieve muscle full. And now, will 30 grams be better? Probably not. In some cases, it may be a little bit better. We know that when older athletes and masters athletes that are somewhat anabolic resistant, 30 grams of protein, and maybe even up to 40 grams of protein in a bolus, meaning one shot time of use of consumption, can be beneficial. But in general, for young athletes, especially all the way to college and probably even professional because they're still young, 20 grams at a time of whey protein is a ceiling. And now then the question is, the other question was at one time was, well, you need to take your protein right after the workout because there's a window and the anabolic window shuts and then you're not growing anymore and blah, blah, blah. Well, not necessarily true. The anabolic window can be up as much as 24 hours. And how you can extend the anabolic window is you don't have, there's a process of about, a time frame of about 30 minutes to maybe even an hour and a half after a workout. Everybody's a little different. Where the body is still in a catabolic or breakdown mode. It's not in an anabolic phase yet. But taking away protein right after a workout is probably a waste of time. It's probably better maybe half an hour later or so to take it. That's probably timing-wise. Generally, what we do is a half an hour after a workout, even up to an hour, is to introduce the first bolus of 20 grams of whey protein. And that can come from, we usually use chocolate milk with added whey protein powder. It's very simple. Chocolate milk has its own benefits. It's got some extra sugar and calories in there, and so it really ramps up the anabolic process. And you can just do whey by itself as well. That first bolus, and then every 3 hours after that, muscle full falls off. So you can introduce another dose 3 hours later. Not earlier, but 3 hours later. A little longer, somewhere in that zone. And so you could maintain the anabolic effects for quite a while. Of course, some of that can be one of your meals. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be slugging down whey protein powder the whole time. But if you're getting in good quality proteins every 3 hours, you're really maintaining that anabolic effect from that prior workout that you did.
Yeah, no, that's great. I definitely never, before reading your book, never heard of taking, staying under 20 grams and taking that 30 minutes after training and then another 2 to 3 hours later to prolong that anabolic process. I think that's very fascinating. You know, another another supplement, ergogenic, that you talk about that I kind of very much intrigued me, especially of late. Talk about fish oil on the internet. There's been a lot of negative talk about fish oil and some of the effects that it has, and there's a lot of misconceptions that's been going around. And you you talk quite a bit about fish oil and the anabolic qualities that it has. But what also intrigues me is since there's such a high prevalency of head injuries and brain trauma with sports these days. You know, with concussions and the NFL and football, I have a couple of athletes personally that have suffered traumatic brain injuries from constant concussions, you know, 3-4 different kinds of concussions. You talk about the effects fish oil has. I was wondering on the brain, and you have your own little concoction for pre and post concussion. I was wondering if you wouldn't mind discussing a little bit about fish oil and also the effects it has on the brain.
Well, concussions, and I haven't had a whole lot of experience with concussions personally. A number of years ago, one of the athletes I worked with was an NFL, a first-round draft pick in the NFL, and he had suffered a couple concussions for the year. And so I was very, the bells go off and I go, well, there's got to be something that can be done with this concussion stuff. And so I started tinkering a little bit, and I write about it in the book. I won't go into it now, but kind of my history of researching the certain nutrients that may, improve the or reduce the concussive effects. Concussions, well, the concussion itself is just the start of the process. It's the after effect that really is the problem. That's really a very great stress on the brain that creates a lot of inflammatory response. Inflammation can be a good thing. It can be a bad thing, depending on how much of it there is. Body needs some inflammation for repair and for signaling, but when it gets excessive, it can be very destructive. And I think that's what happens. And it oftentimes happens in what I call the soup of free radicals and inflammation. Free radicals tend to feed in and stimulate inflammatory proteins, and inflammatory proteins then stimulate free radicals. So it's kind of a closed loop. And so the process occurs post-concussion. For quite some time, probably several days, and then probably subsides. But by then, some damage has been done. So the question is, what kind of nutrients can be introduced that may influence that? A lot of this is still kind of speculation. We know the pathways, though, and a lot of the concussion work has been showing, you know, what actually goes on and what kind of damage occurs. And we know also that nutrients can be introduced that may improve that. So as far as fish oil, which I've always recommended for athletes for a number of reasons. One is it's a lubricant. It's very much involved in cell structures and reaction and quickness. It's also anabolic, and it improves blood flow. You know, all these nitric oxide products that were developed over the last few years that really scientifically haven't panned out much probably don't even hold a candle to fish oil. Because fish oil really helps let blood cells flow and deliver nutrients and oxygen to tissue very, very nicely. So, again, in a certain zone, fish oil can be very beneficial. So for concussions, I recommend, as a pre-concussion, just taking fish oil as a regular process as one of those nutrients that would probably be a benefit. After post-concussion, there are other things. I do talk about a number of different nutrients in the book that would be kind of a post-concussive cocktail, if you would. That would probably have benefit. And I have some experience with those nutrients and concussions and neurological problems. So,
Yeah, I found again, I found that whole section very very intriguing, especially with all the literature coming out about head injuries and everything like that. So I find just particularly that part of your book very unique compared to a lot of other books on nutrition and you know, supplements and stuff like that. You know, now, so from a practical standpoint, Rick, I was wondering if you wouldn't mind giving some recommendations now for the coach and the athlete and the parent that are listening to, if they're going to go to a Vitamin World or a GNC or any kind of store to buy a protein, creatine, a fish oil, some of the things to look for on the label, you know, that that's either good or bad to stay away from. I'd love to get your recommendations.
Well, practically, you know, if I walk into a nutrition store and I start cruising the aisles and looking at the different labels, there's a lot of things that I just won't take. So what would I look for? Again, I look for simple nutrient formulas. I'm not big on multiple ingredients. I would look at the antioxidant, you know, power of the formula. Does it have vitamin C, vitamin E, N-acetylcysteine, anything that's considered a quote antioxidant in there? And I go about, I go in the book also about a pathway called AMPK. I mentioned mTOR earlier as the main anabolic pathway. Well, AMPK is kind of its opposite. It's kind of like a seesaw. AMPK is on one side and mTOR C1 is on the other side. And so when AMPK is high, mTOR is low, and vice versa. So there are certain nutrients that will increase AMPK, which will actually probably retard from the anabolic effect, if that's your goal, if you want the anabolic effect or restorative muscle building effect, that will actually retard. So I'll look at the labels and see. I go about it, I write it in the book about a lot of different nutrients, so somebody should probably look at the book to actually get a really good feel for all these things, but simplicity is probably number one. Not overly complicated formulas. And again, it's the business of sport nutrition today. It's, you know, well, if this company has it, we'll add a little bit more of this, and then we'll add a little of this, and we'll put this in there. And all of a sudden, it becomes just a giant cesspool of soup, you know, of stuff. And I look at simple formulas. Creatine, I would buy it simply creatine. I like creatine, but I would like it probably by itself. I prefer CreaPure, which is German creatine. In the old days, the early 90s, we purchased creatine from Fansteel, which was an American company, but they're no longer making it. But a really good quality creatine comes from CreaPure. Jaro Nutrition, Jaro Formulas makes a plain CreaPure product, and I'm sure other companies do as well. So creatine, whey protein, again, not a lot of bells and whistles and fluff with it, just good whey protein. I like it naturally flavored and sweetened. I don't like a lot of the artificial stuff. I think it retards from the process. Some of the artificial sweeteners have been shown now to retard from the adaptive anabolic process, and actually not so good to use. So I look more for stuff that's based on maybe a little sugar in there, which is fine for an athlete, or a stevia. I sometimes sweeten things with stevia a little bit, or kind of a stevia sugar mix or something like that. There's a further ingredient of non-nutritive sweetener, things like Lohan and the natural sweeteners that I would look for in there. That's on the protein side, just, you know, really good whey protein. There's two main types of whey protein on the market. There's whey isolates and whey concentrates. You'll see it listed on the label as both, you know, two different forms. Some products have blends. They might have mostly concentrate with a little bit of isolate, maybe even some, you know, digest or peptides in there. There's not a lot of difference really between the isolates and the concentrates, I don't think, as far as functionality. Some people could do a little bit better on one or the other with their gut, but in general, there isn't a big deal. Isolate is more pure of a whey protein. It's maybe, let's say, 97-98% whey proteins. Whereas the concentrate may be 85-92%, not far off, but the isolate commands a premium price in the marketplace. So the prices of the isolate protein powders are definitely going to be higher. And that's somebody's choice, you know, if you want to pay more for it. But I look for more, just kind of do the math. I look on the back of the label, I see, okay, how many grams of protein is in this? You know, you take a calculator and even compute it. How many grams of protein am I getting? How many servings am I getting in this container? And then divide that, you know, into the price and get my price to a gram of protein. And then you can look at different you know, manufacturers that way. And then there's a lot of other nutrients that I cover in the book, things like trimethylglycine and mineral orotates, taurine, and even ectosterones that I used for many years with athletes. And then a new, a very exciting product called phosphatidic acid, which is, these are all anabolics I mentioned, part of the mTOR-C1 pathway. And phosphatidic acid is another nutrient that's coming on the market now. You'll probably see it soon. A company called Chemi Nutra, which is an Italian company, phosphatidic acid is actually produced in muscle during muscle contractions. So it produces phosphatidylcholine, and so the body makes it, but it's a trigger for the anabolic process. So taking it orally has been shown to actually increase the anabolic process in recovery as well. So there's a number of things there. I won't go into them all, but I would look, you know, I would look for minimal formulas. I like quality, you know, high quality ingredients. And in these days, for me, it's probably something less than 5 ingredients in a formula, 5 or 6 generally, somewhere in there. I don't get fancy anymore, because the fancier you get, the sloppier you get. The more stuff is in there, the more confusing it is. And there's so many disadaptive nutrients that I would be concerned about stuff in there that may not be appropriate.
Great, that's great information. You know, that's I think you know, that's a lot of good take home points for the parents and coaches and athletes that are listening to this. And you know, obviously, for more information, I highly recommend checking out Rick's new book. That's published by Ultimate Athlete Concepts. You can get it at ultimateathleteconcepts.com. You know, explosive ergogenics for athletes. Rick, I don't want to take up any more of your time. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me and, you know, talk to the listeners and give some information. If our parents and coaches are interested in more information about you, how can they get a hold of you?
Well, that's a good question. I think we're going to be working on some different web directions or something. Certainly through Ultimate Athlete Concepts probably would be the best avenue at this point. We are looking at maybe having me write more, doing like ongoing blogging and writing. So that's, none of that's finalized yet, but I really want to do it. I think it's important. I think it's important to really keep up with the science. So much of the stuff on the market is really not current with science, with the recent science. And so I really want to bring some of that to the forefront as well for coaches and athletes and parents. You know, young athletes, I want to interject one last thing for parents of young athletes. You know, be simple with them. You know, good, like, you know, you referred to Jeff earlier with your athletes. Good, you know, the first foundation is good nutrition in their diet. You know, variety of organic fruits and vegetables and lean meats and whatnot, good fatty acids in your diet, not a lot of processed foods and stuff. That will help their performance and help set the stage. And then as they improve as an athlete and as they get older as an athlete, you can introduce other ergogenics. I talk about kind of the timing of these things in the book, that young athletes need to just, now, eat good, eat right, train well, and get good coaching, and they'll be on the right path, and then they can start using additional things as they improve. But as far as getting a hold of me, I think Ultimate Athlete Concepts is probably the best way. If you will have something up there soon.
Great. Yeah, I hope that you can get more information and do more writing, and because your information is very easy to understand, very practical. You take a lot of science and you make it very easy for people without a science degree to understand, and you dispel a lot of the myths that are out there too, which is fantastic. Again, and it's all backed up by science and research, not just hearsay with famous athletes promoting your stuff. So I think it's great So again, anyone interested, please check out ultimateathletes.com for Rick's book and email ultimateathletes.com if you're looking to get a hold of Rick. Rick, thank you so much for the time. I greatly appreciate it, and hope to talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.